The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, May 20th, 2019.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, what a nice, it's kind of a chilly, rainy day here in Sonoma County, but beautiful, beautiful to be alive, wonderful to be on the air. So much is going on in the world today, and I want to remind the folks here on Tuesday, May 21st, across the nation, there's going to be a National Day of Action to stop the ban and to protect Roe versus Wade. And here locally in Santa Rosa, there's going to be a Stop the Ban rally in Courthouse Square. And joining me in the studio will be Leslie Graves, our local organizer, who has actually organized this rally, so I know it's going to be very, very well received and well organized, and we'll be talking about the event. I'm very excited. Also joining me on the phone this morning will be Charlie Toledo, who's the executive director of Susco Intertribal Council, and we'll be talking about her organization and some of the problems and issues they are working on. Charlie Toledo is a longtime activist, and one of the things we were discussing prior to setting up the interview was the language around abortion and that what women are using. And I'd like to make a suggestion. Let's just drop the word abortion. Let's drop the word choice. And let's just stick to reproductive health care, which includes a multitude of things. I mean, one of the things that Charlie and I were talking about is oftentimes because they attach all this horror to abortion, that often we get caught in a corner. It's really interesting. One of the things that happened, I want to mention, is that it would happen in Alabama. The legislation was signed by a woman, Alabama Governor Kay May. And this is what she says. This legislation stands as a powerful testament to Alabama's deeply held belief that every life is precious. Well, if every life is precious, how come we're killing so many lives in wars, and how many would people not having Medicare? I can go on and on. And, you know, I want to say something about this. You know, It's really interesting having a voice on the radio. And I have to tell you, I've been crying a lot this weekend. I really have. You know, when I think, I was stunned. 25 men made the decision for the women in their state regarding reproductive health care. What is so disturbing to me is that they continue to put abortion on the forefront, when since Roe versus Wade became the law, abortions have declined in the utilization of birth control and education. You know, it's really interesting when you start thinking about how many changes have been made for women over the past 40 years. And one of the things is educating us about health care, about birth control. You know, and it's very disturbing that they show very little concern for the homeless, for the wars, for the fact that we don't have health care for our children. You know, the thing that really bugs me, if they're so concerned about the kids, why don't they get these soft drinks out of the schools? 30 grams of sugar in one soft drink. I mean, here she says, this is legislation that stands as a powerful testament to Alabama's deeply held belief that every life is precious. Well, I agree with her. Every life is precious, but we have to take care of it as if it's precious. And we really do not do that. So that's my little rant. And I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit more with Charlie Toledo. And also, if anybody out there knows anybody in Planned Parenthood or somebody that's really working with the reproductive rights, please give me, email me at elaine@womenspaces.com with the information. I would love to have them on the air. Well, let's talk some exciting, fun things. A special shout out to all those programmers and members who attended our membership appreciation dinner on Saturday night. It was really fun with special music by singer-guitarist Mateo Guzman. And, oh, we had two birthdays that we celebrated. And, you know, I think it's really important that we acknowledge these two people. Happy birthday to Lisa Maldonado, who is on the board of directors for KBBF and director for labor relations for the California Nurses Association, one of my favorite people here in the world. So happy birthday, Lisa. And also longtime programmer. She's been on KBBF since 1993, Marguerite Rosa. And she does the radio show. Now, I don't speak Spanish, but I will try my best. Boleros y Recuerdos. From 8 to 10 a.m. on Saturday morning. And like I said, she has been on the air. Can you believe that she has been on the air since 1993? Well, congratulations to her. I mean, it's wonderful to hear about all those things. Another reminder, another announcement, and hopefully I'm setting up an interview with them, is there the Sonoma County Pride is coming. And the theme, I love the theme, the Love 2019. And here's how they define love. Love is a verb. 1, hold dear, cherish. 2, have compassion for humanity. 3, strut your true colors, self-pride. And 4, party like a rock star, be yourself. Oh, I love it. So that's going to be, the theme is Year of Love. Oh, we really need that. We need the Year of Love. It's going to be happening from May 31st to June 2nd, 2019. And the Sonoma County Premier LGBT event will be in Old Courthouse Square. And they have, if you go on their website, they have all, it's called SonomaCountyPride.org. They have all kinds of listings for different workshops they're going to do. And it looks like it's really going to be a fun event. I mean, how could you stay away from this Year of Love? And trust me, we need to hear about love, that's for sure. Well, I'm going to make a special announcement here. Two of my dear friends, Marnie and Chris Roth, last year they lost their son, Branch Roth, I don't know how to describe it. He was tased and had a heart attack. I mean, it was just a horrible thing that happened. My heart goes out to them. You know, it's really what has come. You know, if you live long enough in your life, everything happens. That's what I'm beginning to conclude. And it was so sad. You know, Marnie Roth. This was the second friend of mine who actually lost a child through police mistake. Let's put it that way. So what I'd like to do is I'm going to make an announcement because they are doing the trial, and it's going to be on, it's going to be on Monday, June 3rd, and will continue through the June 11th. There's no court on Friday. And the court begins at 8 o'clock. It's going to be at the Federal District Court, 90-7th Street in San Francisco. It's courtroom number 9, 19th floor, Jug Tigar. You know, and so people, if they want to go down to San Francisco and support this effort, I really encourage it. You know, it's good to have people there that are in your corner, so to speak, while you're going through something as horrific as this. You know, I mean, my heart goes out to Marnie. I mean, I know in my own heart and my own spirit, I just can't imagine the pain of losing a child. I mean, I can't imagine the pain of losing a child or having a child pulled out of your arms on the border by some strange guy, you know, or maybe your home being bombed in some foreign country and your child is killed, or all of a sudden finds that they've lost their mother and father. I mean, my heart breaks. I mean, we have to start having more compassion and more empathy. And it's really, you know, it's so sad to me, some of the stuff that's going on. And also, what's going on, they say, in the name of God. You know, God decided that Trump's going to be president. God decided that we should go to war with this one or that one. Well, I want to know whose God talking to you. I don't hear those things. I hear peace. I hear love. I hear compassion, as I have mentioned several times on the air, and I don't know if I'm doing an ad or what, but Ken and I have, this is our second round. We're watching again The Buddha on Netflix, 55 episodes. And I really encourage people to, if you have Netflix or you have access to be able to watch this series, what's so important about it, it shows us. It shows us what we are struggling with. And it also demonstrates how we can overcome it, how we can move into a nation of peace and love and empathy. Just like Pride, you know, the year of love. You know, maybe if we celebrate love a little bit stronger, maybe it will help dissipate some of this hate that's going on. I mean, for me, it just, sometimes I wake up in the morning and I say to myself, what is going on here? Why are we making our world so complicated? But again, there's good news. Because on Wednesday, we attended the New Green Deal Town Hall, and it was fabulous. Over 350 concerned citizens showed up, and there were young people there from various groups. One of them is called Sunrise, and another called School for Social Action, and then there's one that says Apopolis Now. And these are really dedicated young people. I mean, they were so articulate when they were doing the presentations, and I really got the feeling of what the New Green Deal is. And what it is, to explain it, is kind of a resolution and a series of ideas that we can move forward on. And I don't understand for the life of me why there's so much resistance. All they're asking is to pass the resolution and start looking at ways to start moving forward with climate change. I mean, folks, we don't have much time left. And, you know, I want to do a special shout out to all the organizers. I mean, it just takes tons of volunteers and organization to pull something like that together. And I also want to thank from the bottom of my heart Congressman Mike Thompson and Congressman Jared Huffman, who both supported the effort, the Green New Deal, but what they did is they made a special video from Washington, D.C., because there's some special votes that they had to participate in, so they could not come to California to be at the event, which they regretted. But they gave two beautiful messages. It gave me such pride when I thought that our congressman would take that much trouble to make sure that we know that they're supporting this action. But what was so interesting to me, our local paper, the Press Democrat, did not have one word about this event. 350 people showed up. There was conversation. There was education. Every nonprofit just about in the community was there that's working on the environment. You know, it was an educational moment for me. I had no idea that we had so much action going on. And I want to do a special shout out to a teacher by the name of Sunny Galhard. She is so inspiring to me because she works with these young people. She helps them speak out, stand up, and be heard. And we need more and more teachers like her. So thank you so much, everybody, for showing up, and to all those young, energetic human beings that gave these exquisite. I'm sorry that there was no coverage on it, and I'm really sorry for anybody that was not there, because you could hear our young people taking the bull by the horn, so to speak, and really intelligently looking at what's going on and asking themselves the question, how can I get involved? How can I encourage other people to get involved? How can I support young people in junior high school and high school to get involved? I mean, they even had kids there from elementary school that were explaining the environment to me. I was completely blown away. And the most exciting thing for me was that I went over to the School for Social Action table, and they all did the Women's Spaces Pledge with me. And it gave me such pride to see these young women stepping out. I mean, that's what we work so hard. You know, Sonoma County is the birth of an Women's History Month here, and it was made possible by the women in this community, and it was such a heartfelt feeling to see the result of some of the work, that here comes a generation that's willing to speak out and do something. So thank all of you. Well, there's a lot to think about, you know, a lot to think about, but that's what Women's Spaces is all about. Well, since we're going to be talking tomorrow, excuse me, about Tuesday's event, Stop the Ban, that's going to be happening in Courthouse Square, and also is happening across the United States. There's going to be protests. I think it's going to be across the globe, actually. It's going to be a very global action as well as a United States action. And it's going to be on Tuesday, the 21st, that people will be celebrating. And I thought I would pull out one of our favorite songs by Pink Martini, I Am Woman, to remind us, as women, we have the power. If we come together in sisterhood, if we come together with the idea that we are one and we need to support one another and quit all this division on color, race, class, all that stuff, we are women and we need to come together to protect our rights, to protect our ability to choose, and for God's sakes, to protect the future of our children. So here we go with I Am Woman by Pink Martini. And when we come back, I will have the honor of talking to Leslie Graves, our local organizer, who will be organizing the event this Tuesday in downtown square, Santa Rosa. So let's go, Ken. I Am Woman. And let's just wake up everybody when you hear this song.
I am woman, hear me roar in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor, and no one's ever gonna keep me down again. Oh yes, I am wise, but it's wisdom born of pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I've gained. If I have to, I can't do anything. I am strong, never break me, 'cause it only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I will come back even stronger, not a novice any longer, for you deepen the conviction of my.
like it's my blood boiling. But then I think about it, 2020, we're going to be celebrating 100 years since we got the vote. And we're in a place where we're about to lose so many gains that we have made and so many things that we have moved forward on. It is really a shame. For you folks just joining us, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners that the opinions presented here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and I am your host, Elaine B. Holtz. By the way, the B stands for Beverly. I got an email. They said, what does that B stand for? It stands for Beverly. But when I was a motivational speaker, I used to remind myself to be here now. I'm doing the best I can, and I'm a beautiful child of the universe. Well, without further ado, I want to invite one of my favorite guests who seems to be starting to be a regular here on Women's Spaces. She's doing so much organizing. Leslie Graves. Welcome, Leslie. Welcome to Women's Spaces once again, my love.
Thank you so much. I love that. I love being a regular here with you. Oh, it's very enjoyable. It's great to always be doing something for the community.
Well, you know, Leslie, here we are, you know, here nationally, we're going to have this ban, you know,
Stop the Ban.
Stop the Ban, right.
So it is, and you can hashtag that and find lots of actions that are going on around the country, as well as if you go to www.stopabortionbans.org, you'll actually find all the different events that are happening. You can put in your zip code and you can find out one that is happening near you. Put in a zip code anywhere near Sonoma County and you'll find the Santa Rosa Stop the Bans rally in Courthouse Square that's happening tomorrow, Tuesday the 21st from 5 to 7 o'clock.
Well, you know, Leslie, let's talk a little bit about this. What I call you, you're an organizer extraordinaire. I mean, it's not only do you organize, but someone can give you something a week ahead of time, and then all of a sudden, there it is, and it's always a success. Tell us a little bit, what is motivating you to do this, and what is your secret for your success, you think?
Well, I'm going to talk specifically about this rally, Stop the Bans rally tomorrow from 5 to 7 in Courthouse Square. And actually, on Friday morning, I was messaged by a participant in past rallies, like the Women's March and the Families Belong Together event that happened last June. She had noticed that there was a national call to action, and she asked if I was going to put something together. I researched a little bit, found out some more information, definitely agree with the pro-choice stance, and want to make that option still available to women. We want to protect Roe, and I decided, after finding out that no other organization was going to have any action here in Northern California, except for in San Francisco, that in fact, Santa Rosa needed to have this. It's an opportunity for women and men, those people that are non-binary, non-gender basis, or even trans, to come on out and show their support for all of the states that are across the country that, unfortunately, these very restrictive bans and a full ban in Alabama were just created and signed into law. So we want to make sure that this opportunity is not missed for us to show up, speak up, and fight for not only ourselves, but women across the country here.
Well, tell us a little bit about how are you feeling as a woman about this? I mean, it's wonderful that you're doing organize this because we definitely need it. But how do you feel about this? I mean, what are some of your thoughts, you know, in organizing and listening and talking to people?
Well, the outpouring is just amazing. I mean, we're going to have probably over 1,000 people in Courthouse Square, rain or shine. And personally, I do believe that women have a choice. We have body autonomy. The gentleman that is sitting next to you that I know that you love, Ken Norton, he has body autonomy and has no restrictive laws put onto him as a male in the U.S., for his choices around what he does with his medical provider. I want to make sure that that's true for not only myself, but for all women, for all young girls that are coming up. The restrictive ban in Alabama that was signed into law last Wednesday on the 15th actually made no exceptions for women that had experienced incest or rape. That is very, very important that we realize that these bans and these restrictive laws around health care for women, and it is health care for women, that are really impeding how we are able to talk with our doctors, what we are able to receive from our doctors, and everything and anything that is going to make it to where we are productive human beings for the rest of our lives.
I think that's what made my hair stand on end when I heard that they tried to make it. They said, okay, you're going to pass this, but let's just make a provision where it make an exception with, you know, with rape or incest. I cannot believe that they would not do that. I mean, that, I mean, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, our listeners, you just try to imagine this. I mean, God forbid it should never happen to any one of us, but say you're raped. And then all of a sudden you find yourself pregnant. And you're going to, I mean, how are you going to feel? How is your family going to feel? Oh, and then you bring this child into the world. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. And it doesn't make sense to me when I hear people say, oh, we're, you know, God has claimed this, you know, when you have a child of rape, it's God sent. And I said to myself, what? What? Who's the God that we're listening to?
I want to be clear, though, that if a woman in that circumstance were to choose to carry that child to term and to mother that child or to possibly put that child in adoption, that is her choice.
That's the point.
That is the point. Choice is the point. That women are human beings. That women's rights, women's health care is human rights and human health care. That is the case. Right now, in the United States, in Alabama, I want to also be clear for those listeners that are out there that are questioning, well, in Alabama, so is today the day or on Thursday, the 16th of May, right after the governor signed that abortion ban into law, are women being jailed? The answer is no. Actually, the abortion ban was in Alabama was very specific that women are exempt from criminal and civil liability. They're going after the doctors. And the doctors can be held for 99 years. It is a felony if a doctor performs an abortion in Alabama. So, right now across the country, we want to make sure that we get the right message out there. Abortions are legal because Roe versus Wade protects us.
Well, it's not that they're just legal. It's constitutional.
It's constitutional.
That we have that right in the United States, our Constitution, that we have freedom of choice as women over our body. That's what the decision was made. It wasn't specifically that said, you go have an abortion. It was all about choice and being able to make that decision with yourself and your doctor.
Yes, and that decision is private. And that was a big stipulation around Roe versus Wade, is our right to privacy, because we have body autonomy. So those discussions that we have with the doctor, the procedures that we have with a doctor, if we are a woman or a man, it is a private matter. And that is the basis of Roe versus Wade. So when Alabama made this into law on Wednesday, May 15th, just a few days ago, what they were doing, and many of the other states that are also actually bringing into law some of these very restrictive laws around women's health care, what they're doing is they are going after Roe versus Wade. They're going after the constitutionality of Roe versus Wade. What we're doing tomorrow in Courthouse Square in Santa Rosa on May 21st from 5 to 7 o'clock in the evening is we are standing up and we are fighting for Roe versus Wade. We are saying stop the bans and stop your attacks on Roe versus Wade. Stop the attacks on women's health care. Stop the attacks on our reproductive freedom.
Oh, boy, I couldn't have said it any better. I'm telling you something. We have to all be as passionate as you are, Leslie, because this is a very important issue. It's about freedom. It's about freedom of choice. And my fear is we start doing these kinds of laws for this situation, and before you know it, little by little by little, we lose all our freedoms. Well, give us some details. What's going to be happening at the rally here in Santa Rosa? And do you have any idea have you heard any words about what's going on nationally? What's going to happen in Santa Rosa? Who's going to be there with you?
Well, a great many groups have reached out already and have said that they will be at the event. It is not an event in which we're going to have a stage or we're going to have speakers. It is an event where we are there in order to show our energy and our protest of the bans that are happening across those southern states and other states around the country. So we have about 1,000 people expected to attend. We have groups like Indivisible Sonoma County, the Sonoma County Democratic Party, the Santa Rosa Democratic Club, and a great many others, as well as the National Organization for Women.
Yeah, we'll be there.
That's right. You will be raising your banner.
We're going to bring our banner. You know, we have a nice banner. But, you know, to me, the thing that's the most stunning is that we're here today. When I thought this was all behind us, I saw this wonderful sign. It says, oh, my God, I thought this was behind us already. Well, we've come to the end of the segment, Leslie. Thank you so much. Give us again the website. There's a website you said that people can see what's happening all across the United States. Give us the time and the details and any last words that you might have.
Great, yes. Actually, I want to encourage everybody here locally to go to Facebook and just put in Stop the Bans Rally in Santa Rosa, and you will find all the information about our local event. You can also find events throughout the nation by going to www.stopabortionbans.org, and you will find events all over. And this event in Santa Rosa tomorrow, Tuesday, May 21st from 5 to 7 p.m. will be in Courthouse Square, rain or shine. If you didn't make a sign already, don't worry. We have free sign making supplies. We'll have a couple canopies out there just to keep you a little bit dry in case it does rain. But bring your voice, bring your noisemakers, bring your sign if you've already made it, dress for variable weather, and be ready to stand up and use your voice to fight for not only ourselves here in California, because when attacks happen on civil and human rights, they do not stop at your doorstep. They are going to come through if we allow them. So let's all stand up and fight for women across the country and our reproductive rights.
Well, Leslie Graves, thank you so much for all that you do and for organizing this wonderful rally that's going to be happening tomorrow evening. That's May 21st from 5 to 7 at Courthouse Square. And boy, I'll tell you. Well, we're going to take a musical break. And then when we come back, I'll be talking with Charlie Toledo, who is the executive director for the SOSCO Indian organization. And I can hardly talk when I think of what Leslie, all the things that we just covered and we just talked about. I mean, it's mind-boggling what's happening. But I'm going to play a very special song, and this is a song that I love. And, you know, I want my folks, my listeners to know, I know that I play some songs a lot of different times. You hear it during the program. The reason I play these songs, there's a specific message in them. And this is Pale Moon by Becky Hobbs. Listen to the lyrics. We are one planet, one people, one heart. What a beautiful line. One planet, one people, one heart. And I also want to say one thing. There's not one man out there that would be here if it were not for a woman. Here we go with Becky Hobbs and Pale Moon. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Charlie Toledo.
Must be a better way for us. Help us to give, to learn and to live and to
One people, one planet, one heart. You were listening to Pale Moon, sung by Becky Hobbs, and I just want folks to know this is from her album, Anaya Hay, Beloved Woman of the Cherokees, who was her great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. I love that song, One Planet, One People, One Heart. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. Without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining me on the phone is Charlie Toledo, who is the executive director. Oh, my goodness, I lost my notes. At the SUCL Intertribal Council. Welcome, Charlie. Welcome to Women's Spaces. Can you hear us? Hello.
Hello, I'm here.
Okay. Can you come closer to the phone, my love?
I'm really close to the phone.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. How's that? Now, we're talking to you in Napa, California, right?
Yes, correct.
You know, before we start, I would like to tell my listeners a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Sure, and we say it's SUCL Intertribal.
Oh, SUCL. Okay, Well, thank you so much, because we were sitting here, we were going back and forth to make sure that we pronounced it right. So, SUCL Intertribal Council. Charlie Toledo is a Tuala descendant and a native of New Mexico. She is the executive director of the SUCL Intertribal Council, a community-based organization incorporated in 1992, located in Napa, California. She has an extensive experience as a public speaker, a presenter, a community organizer in regional, statewide, and national and international forums. Since 1986, she's worked in alternative healthcare field, background in mediation consultation for individuals, families, and organizations. She has been an organic gardener. By the way, we are organic gardeners also, Charlie, and we're beekeepers, since 1978. She has a lifelong commitment to social justice and international work on human rights and environmental social justice issues. What a resume. And I have to tell my listeners that when you send me all your experiences, I was just amazed, especially about your involvement with the United Nations, which we will talk about in a few moments. So tell me, Charlie, before we start, you are descended, did I pronounce it right? T-O-W.
It's Towa.
Towa people. Can you explore a little bit of their background and a little history with
sure.
us?
Sure. You know, a lot of people in the United States are separated from their traditional background because of the assimilation program. So my grandparents were taken as children in New Mexico from their tribes of origin and raised within Hispanic families as servants, or really slaves, because they were taken against their will and the will of their families. So my grandfather was 7 years old when he was taken from the Towa people, which is an area southwest of Santa Fe, and then brought into an area in Albuquerque, south of Albuquerque, in a place called Peralta, which is a rural farming community just south of Albuquerque. And that's where my parents, both of my parents, were born there. And then they did a voluntary migration to Albuquerque when they got married and had, I'm one of 10 children, and 8 of us were born in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so I was raised, you know, in New Mexico, the tribes didn't get as decimated as they did in California, so they're very visible to this day. But certainly through my childhood, that was a predominant exposure. You know, there's museums, the villages are visible, and you can, we would go there on the weekends for events and to get bread or corn, different traditional foods. That was available through my early childhood. My grandfather was a chili farmer. So we were raised, you know, just what we would call now, by today's standards, would be sustainable, organic, locally farmed beef and meats and corn and chili and beans. And so my parents didn't have money. They were still raised when bartering was the norm, and money started coming in later in their, like, early adulthoods. Money, you know, like we use it now, dollars and...
Well, you know, I kind of envy that you have such a rich background, you know, and that you at least know your history. You know, my people
yes.
came over from Europe, and I have no idea. You know, even their villages were destroyed. So, I mean, it's really wonderful to hear that. Well, you know, you're really a very, very active woman, I have to say. And it's just an honor to have met you and to even be talking to you this morning. You know, when did you become an activist? You know, particularly you were a woman, particularly a Native American woman. What were some of the challenges you faced at the beginning? And what are some of the challenges that you're still facing?
I think they're the same challenges. You know, the U.S. government has a policy of assimilation. First, it was to destroy the Native people, and then to force the survivors into assimilation. So I refer to myself as an assimilated Native, which means my parents and grandparents had to accept Catholicism or be killed. The survivors were all some kind of Christian, Catholic or Mormon or something, because their option was to be killed. So that was forced upon my grandparents and parents. And so I was raised in a Catholic, you know, more of a Hispanic Catholic environment. And that was a positive in my early childhood, but in my adolescent years, I started to voluntarily separate. But it was through that religion and the whole Mary, you know, said pray the rosary for world peace. So I started doing that fervently when I was about 6 years old. I had a commitment and a concept that the whole world could be at peace. This goddess was telling us if we said these prayers that world peace was an option for us. And so I started doing that when I was probably between the ages of 3 and 6. And then at the age of about 16, you know, through the high school, we were given a very vigorous kind of Jesuit-influenced education, which had us question. And I think that's the greatest gift I had from the Catholic upbringing, was to question. And I think that's what's opened doors to the work I do now and have done all of my life, just asking questions of myself and the world around me. So I started questioning that loving God and just the whole hierarchy of the Catholic Church. I was never, like I said, around 16, I started coming away from that. But we started being exposed to the Vietnam War and the root causes of it, and that's when I got an understanding of what the military-industrial complex was, about my sophomore, junior year in high school. And so I made a commitment at that age never to feed into that system.
Well,
and started working in the peace movement to help, you know, because at that time in the, what was the late 60s, 1966, 67, 68, it was mandatory draft, and the young people, myself, my whole peer group, my siblings and, you know, peers, we did not have the right to vote until 21, and then yet young men were being drafted at the age of 18 to go to Vietnam to fight in this unjust, undeclared war. And so we started creating, you know, opposition to that at 16. You know, I started being trained as a draft counselor and figuring out ways to change the system as it existed. We wanted two things: to have the right to vote and also to end the Vietnam War. But really what I was after, and I had the understanding at that age, was to end that system, that military-industrial system, which is based on the oppression and exploitation of indigenous people of the earth.
Well, you know, it's real interesting when you talk about your school experience. I remember when I was going to high school, it was a little bit different. I mean, I was going to high school in the 50s. And I remember that they had the House Un-American. And I raised my hand and I said, you know, I asked the teacher, I said, well, since we're talking about people being communists, can we study the communists so I can find out if I met one, I'd know what he looked like or mm-hmm, she looked like. Mm-hmm. And they almost expelled me for school because they found out my father was a union man. They found out we were Jewish. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh my goodness. I mean, it's really amazing. Well, that sounds like quite a background. And I can really share that the Vietnam War woke up many of us, and it's so interesting when you think about today, they're trying to justify it and they say, like, oh no, we should have won it and all that other garbage. Well, Charlie, talk a little bit about the Cisco Intertribal Council, when you got involved, and what's your motivation? I mean, what are some of the goals for the organization and some of your priorities? I know you're working on a special project, and maybe you'd like to talk about that.
Sure. So Susco Intertribal Council was founded in 1972, and that was one of the first public organizations after the invasions of California from the 1850s. And that was around the time I did a voluntary migration to Napa, 1972, the takeover of Alcatraz. But there was a village site, and that's the Susco, was the Patvin village site, was being dug up to put in a freeway overpass referred to as the Southern Crossing. So Jim Big Bear King was the founder of the initial Susco Council back then in 1972 to create protocols for the state of California when burial remains and human remains were dug up due to construction, because every part of California was fully inhabited by indigenous people before the Euro invasions of the 1800s. So that was, Susco started, and then it went into a hiatus, and so I came back around 1992, and I had started to ask the question when I first moved to Napa in 1972, I moved to Napa, and that's because the FBI was after me. That's that whole story of the draft and the war. I was still being pursued by the federal government, and I had left the country for quite a while and had come back into the United States, and most of my friends were either in jail or doing alternative service because of our, you know, opposition to the Vietnam War, and, you know, the draft had been ended and a voluntary war system was in place. But when I re-entered the country, the FBI was still kind of tailing me, so I came to Napa where I had a boyfriend, and we were working in the vineyards and stuff and doing farming, and we were always coming across arrowheads and grinding bowls, and so I began to ask the question, where are these native people? And people said, oh, they moved north, and I said, north where? So that was a question that I continued to ask till I came in contact with the tribes of California, which was more like around 1982. I was actually in Arizona, because the Dene people were asking people of the world to come to support them because the U.S. government was trying to force them off their traditional lands in a place called Four Corners, which is the northeastern part of Arizona, very rural, remote part. And I met a California elder Pomo woman there who needed a ride back to Napa. She'd gotten a one-way ride, and then she came back with me and my two young girls. And she's the person that introduced me into the California Native world in 1982. And in 1986, I had a vision to create a safe place that Native people could gather and do ceremony, because Napa is one of the oldest inhabited places, continuously inhabited places in North America. And my friend had retired at that point to the Round Valley Reservation. She was no longer living in this community, but she was still getting called to address archaeological issues. So she said, why don't you start a group so you can take care of that stuff, because I don't want to come down there anymore. So we reactivated Susco Intertribal Council in 1992, and that's when I became the director. And with the primary goal of bringing the California Indian population into visibility, but also to create a safe place for us to do traditional ceremonies. And you have to realize, until 1978, it was a felony offense for Native people to do ceremony.
Are you serious?
It was President Carter that created the Native American Religious Freedom Act in 1978, which decriminalized Native American ceremony. And so we were in the forefront as an organization, and myself personally, that's why we're having to go out to and hide in remote rural areas. But really, SUSCO and a lot of other groups at that time, after Alcatraz in 72, that was when the native population said, we're still here, we're still alive. And they sent a message out to the world that they had survived, you know, the invasions of the Europeans. And then we, all of us collectively, began a movement that's still moving. You know, it's still working really hard to create accurate information about what happened here, especially in California. Because that wasn't that long ago. People say, oh, Columbus, 1492, but that was the East Coast. The European invaders got to California, especially this region of California, in the 1850s. So that's just about two or three generations ago. And see, like what happened in New Mexico with my family, that was my grandparents. That was just, I'm just two generations, three generations removed from those forced kidnappings and assimilation, because that was part of the strategy of the United States to dominate and kill the native population. California was fully inhabited by native people who lived in permanent villages.
You know,
and
you
that's
know,
when I restarted the organization, I realized how intense it was.
Charlie, I want to ask you a question, which is really interesting.
Sure.
As you're telling the story, you know, it feels like these same people are doing other things in different ways, but it seems like there's the changes that have happened. It almost feels like there's a something happening where they want to push us backwards instead of helping us
right.
move forward. So how important it is to have organizations like yourself that can, you know, that keep the traditions up. I mean, it's always so shocking when you hear that they actually pull children, just like they're pulling children from the borders
right.
now.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. It's
there
the
were laws in place. What the United States government was doing was legal. To kill the Indians. They were paying people to killing the Indians. They were getting paid to do that. They were purchasing children as slaves. Those were, it was all legal, everything that was done.
Well, it's the
and
same
those
thing.
Those laws are still in place. The laws that allowed for the oppression and annihilation of the indigenous people of what is now referred to as the United States, whether it's California, New Mexico, Arizona, those laws are still in place.
Well, you know, people really need to recognize one thing. You know, it's the same thing with what happened in Nazi Germany with the Holocaust. Everything was legal. These people
right.
made laws and said, this is the way we want it to be. Well, you know, the segment runs very quickly, you know, and I'm looking at the clock, and I really want to find out what your involvement with the United Nations is and what you'd like to share in that area.
Well, and shortly after I started the organization, I realized how this was so systemic, and that really to get help for what we were doing, we had to go into the international community. So I was part of the Beijing conference, and it was the fourth annual international conference on human rights for women and children, and that I met with indigenous people from around the world. We became our own camp. And so that's how I initially got involved with the United Nations and have stayed involved. I'm chair of an organization that has consultative status with the UN, which means we can file reports. But part of the big, huge step that happened in 1995, that SUSCO was a small part of all these other organizations globally, that we petitioned the UN once again, which had been done since its inception, 1930s, to create indigenous representative at the United Nations, and that was a successful campaign. That happened in 1995. It was submitted, it was approved, and implemented starting in the year 2000 was when indigenous people of the world first started to get representation at the UN. Before that, it was just the industrialized nations that had a voice and a vote. The indigenous people still do not have a vote on the floor, but they have two permanent committees that were put into place and are still operating, giving us a venue in the international community to file our complaints and to create solution-based actions for what can resolve the problems in our different regions and areas.
Well, you know, Charlie, there's so much. I mean, I really feel time is a barrier in this show, I'll tell you that much. So is there anything in particular, you know, as we end the segment, anything in particular that you really would like the folks to know? I know you were saying that you had this special project that you're working on at
right. We've been working on since 1995. We purchased land. That was one of our principal goals in reorganizing, to create a model for what is being referred to now as revillaging, to create a model of how indigenous people lived on the land sustainably in respect to agriculture, water use, and construction. So Suskell House is our project that we're kind of at the end phase of. We purchased land back in 1998, and we've been building it out, all the infrastructure's in place. We have our building permit, so we're in the middle of a fund development campaign to finish out the construction of Suskell House, which is a safe place for Native people to do ceremony, to help share and perpetuate for future generations a combination of Native American traditions and modern technology, which is now referred to as permaculture. That's how we use water and land and native plants in a way to sustain the land to go on for thousands and thousands of years.
Okay, Charlie, we're coming to the end of the segment here. Ken is just giving me he's giving me the 2-minute right. finger here. So why don't you give us your website and any other information that you would like to share with the listeners?
So Suskell Council, Suskoll, SuskellCouncil.org is our website, SuskellCouncil.org, or if you Google Suskell Council, we'll pop up with our website, and our phone number is 707-256-3561.
Well, Charlie Toledo, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I would like to have an open invitation with you, because I really think that we could have a really good conversation about this United Nations and what's going on there. I think it's very important for people to know about that. I mean, it's amazing how little we know. So thank you so much for being on Women's Spaces, and I want to wish you a wonderful, wonderful day.
Sure. I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was just an absolute pleasure. Well, that's it for our show, folks. Boy, I'll tell you, what great guests. I mean, women. I am Women Hear Me Roar in numbers too big to ignore. I mean, with people like Leslie Graves that just been on the show, who's organizing the event Stop the Ban that's going to be happening in downtown Santa Rosa. And also, if you go on the website, www.womenspaces, we will have all the different websites so you can find out what's going on nationally. A special thank you for being on our show to Charlie Toledo, the executive director of Suskell Intertribal Council. What an amazing story. I mean, when you think of what our Native American sisters and brothers have gone through, it's heartbreaking in a way. Remember, again, I'm going to remind you about the event. It's going to be tomorrow night, May 21st, from 5 to 7 o'clock in downtown Santa Rosa Courthouse Square. A reminder to you, the children are our future. You must never lose sight of that. You've been listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. I look forward to being with you the next time.
Is you. The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, May 20th, 2019.